just delve a little bit into what is going on for the here. So let me switch to something else and then I'll be back to talk about Fat Tuesday.
What did you want? How could I guess? You wanted more. I gave you.
Before the ritual fasting of the Lenten season, which begins with Ash Wednesday. So the one city that I think of in the United States that does Mardi Gras quite well, of course, is New Orleans. We always hear about festival season, and I think New Orleans, Louisiana, is probably the best place, perhaps, for a Mardi Gras celebration. I mean, they certainly have many days devoted to it, and it goes on for, I believe, 3 days before Ash Wednesday. And they have, you know, certainly a lot of the traditional things. We were talking about, with Mary Lou, Fat Tuesday and the donuts, which is one of the traditions. You can get the Fastnacht donuts, which is a Pennsylvania Dutch treat, at the Clinton Bookstore at some point tomorrow. We're going to bring up the details of that. Usually you hear, you think of the fatty foods, you know, really incredible celebrations. There's usually beads. Someone asked if there would be beads, and certainly Mary Lou said there's beads and masks. So it's that, you know, opportunity to be something else before you start your Lenten celebration or fasting, and it's an opportunity to celebrate. It's not only in the United States, of course, it's a French word, so we know it happens in other countries, and Belgium has a very large celebration in one of their cities, and they have the Carnival of Ghent, which is one of the masterpieces of the heritage of humanity. Brazil has a celebration, Cayman Islands, so if anyone wants to go and celebrate the Cayman Islands, but there are many countries that do this in an attempt to have a celebration before the is a more traditional period of fasting. So certainly party, we have parties to think of, we have celebrations when we think about Mardi Gras. So we're going to go through the list that any of us and talk a little bit about those details. I do have to catch up with some additional commercials here, and we'll be back on track in just a moment to talk about where exactly you could go in Quitman for the celebration, what the times are, and all of the participating stores and businesses. We always like to promote some of the small businesses and some of the creativity that goes on in our beautiful county of Hunterdon. So stay with us. We'll be talking more about that in just a moment.
Let Stowaway Self-Storage be your local moving and storage solution. With three great locations in Hunterdon County, Stowaway is conveniently located in Flemington, White House, and Lebanon. Stowaway Self-Storage offers sizes from 5x5 to 50x50, discounted packing supplies, and you
718-7077 or visit njfin.com. That's njfin.com.
Okay, now I've successfully gone through my advertisements for the first 15 minutes of our show here, so we are right about Fat Tuesday and what that means. We heard from Mary Lou, the owner of Amaryllis, who was kind enough to tell us a little bit about some of the exciting things that are going on for the Clinton on the Guild, which is excellent that they put together an event for tomorrow. But I wanted to just delve a little bit into what is going on for the... keep having interruptions here, so let me switch to something else, and then I'll be back to talk about Fat Tuesday.
Well, good afternoon, Hunterdon County and folks around. We are here in the beautiful chamber office in sunny downtown Flemington. And if you haven't had a chance to look at the facility, the new facility, I hope you will soon, because it's really a beautiful building and it's going to even be better. So it's March 3rd. You haven't heard the wind. I guess March is the month for wind, and we certainly have had some. So let's talk about what's going on. And as far as the weather, I actually see that there's a possibility this afternoon of a scattered rain or snow, about a 40% chance. Don't think so. Hasn't happened. It's bright and sunny outside. And tonight there is also another chance of scattered snow showers, but then mostly clear, Low, it's going to get cold, about 17 degrees. Then tomorrow, Saturday, mostly sunny, high of about 36 degrees. So we're not getting the warm weather we've been getting. Tomorrow night should be clear, and again, a nice sunny day on Sunday. 37 degrees is the high, and then into Monday, it's partly cloudy, partly sunny, but then it's going to jump high of about 51 degrees. So we're here, the program It's the Law. I'm Pat Smits, and I hope if anyone is listening, or whoever's listening, will also listen to the sports guys at 5 o'clock, because we have the Pee Wee football team from Hunterdon who won the national championship, and the coach and some of the boys are going to be on. The other thing I'd like to be sure to remind people is if you are getting emails, to be super careful, because there is a lot of spam that's coming out that really looks like emails that you might want to open. So be extremely careful. Obviously, I would never open an email from a bank. Absolutely, the Social Security Administration never, when I say absolutely, the Social Security Administration and the IRS do not send out emails. So if you get anything from the IRS or Social Security Administration, don't open it, because that's the problem. When you open it, they can get into the computers, and apparently because of all the hacking they've done into some things like Yahoo, they've received and have probably millions of email addresses. So anyway, that's my just warning today. I'm Pat Smits. I'm an attorney here in Hunterdon County, and I have a program, It's the Law, at 4 o'clock on Fridays. We turned out to be a little late today because we had some difficulty, but you've heard the weather, and now I'm going to tell you who brings the weather. Our sponsors are very important to us, and we don't want to slight them, and we hope you certainly go ahead and they're the people we should be doing business with.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a...
Let Stowaway Self-Storage be your local moving and storage solution. With three great locations in Hunterdon County, Stowaway is conveniently located in Flemington, White House, and Lebanon. Stowaway Self-Storage offers sizes from 5x5 to 50x50, discounted packing supplies, and U-Haul rentals on site. Affordable monthly rentals for your personal and business use, let Stowaway help you park your car in the garage again or store those old records that you need to keep. Visit us at stowawayselfstorage.com and mention this ad to receive 50% off your first month's rent.
Whoops, I've been putting some papers, messing some papers. Hope that didn't interfere with Stowaway. Great organization. So what's happening in the law? Well, apparently the governor's chief counsel is leaving to start a new law firm. So that was announced yesterday. Well, we'll see who is replacing him. And unfortunately for Barone and Kelly, their both post-trial motions failed. And if you haven't heard Barone and Kelly, you must not have been listening in the last couple of years. They are the defendants in the Bridgegate criminal case, Walter Barone Jr. and Bridget Kelly. And they filed motions in the federal court to throw out their convictions for their part in the Bridgegate scandal by orchestrating politically motivated lane closures at the George Washington Bridge. So they were convicted, and now the federal judge has thrown out their motions to throw out their convictions. So he threw out the motions to throw out the convictions. So their convictions stand. I suppose they could go one more step, but in the federal process. But it looks like they're kind of getting to the dead end. So what else is happening? I don't even like to say this because, of course, the attorney-client relationship is not one that always ends well. And the client is able to discharge fees in bankruptcy at any time. And, of course, the client is able to discharge the attorney at any time, but there's always an issue of the outstanding legal fees. And unfortunately, there are clients who play the game and don't pay their attorneys and don't feel like they have to pay their attorneys, and then phony up malpractice suits when they're called to pay their legal fees. Any event, let's not even go there. I've not had a wonderful day. I lost hours of work in a really unusual computer glitch. But in any event, what else is happening? It's become standard in commercial loan transactions for commercial lenders to require a borrower to execute an absolute assignment of the leases and rents as additional security for repayment of a loan. So that is something that's unlike a mortgage, which serves as a lien or encumbrance on the real estate. An absolute assignment of leases and rents conveys present and immediate ownership of the leases and rental income to the lender under New Jersey law. So if you are someone who is asked as part of a transaction for a commercial loan to assign leases and rents as additional security, be sure to talk to an attorney, because this has and can have dire consequences, so that it can really create problems for, it certainly is great from the landlord's standpoint, but it can really create problems for someone who doesn't realize that the rental income really can belong to the lender under New Jersey law. In fact, I found out something recently that if you make a claim against your homeowner's insurance, they often, or at least some companies, make out the check to the owners of the property and their mortgagee, even though the owners of the property have paid for whatever damage they're collecting from the insurance company. So that was a lesson that I didn't realize until it happened. Many of us in my area of Hunterdon County had a huge power surge on Christmas Day. And when I say huge, it burned out appliances, burned out complicated systems. Even though I had a whole house surge protector, we had severe damage. Some of the people in the area were seeing sparks coming out of the outlets. Either we didn't see it or we weren't looking, or that didn't happen to us. But, of course, JCP&L has disclaimed all responsibility, even though I think they should be responsible, because it didn't happen as a result of any ordinary power outage or an accident or any kind of weather problems. Didn't even get an apology for all of us who lost power on Christmas Day. Frankly, I was one of the lucky ones because I do have a generator, and the generator kept some of the power going. But then we didn't have heat or hot water for days. I shouldn't say days. They jerry-rigged it, so we did get some heat and very lukewarm water on the 26th or 27th until they could really fix it. But anyway, that's another reason to do and use local services. In our case, George's Plumbing had installed a fairly complicated radiant heating system, and when Valley Oil couldn't deal with it because it was not something they could fix, even though they came right out on December 26th, and hats off to them, they couldn't handle it. So, of course, it had to be George's Plumbing. We had to get parts from Canada, and it was a very time-consuming job and would never have happened under an ordinary power surge because even my computers didn't go down. We had an extra power surge protector on the computers. That burned out as a result of the power surge, but the computers were, in fact, protected. But so much for that, and so much for trying to deal with companies like JCP&L. I really find it outrageous. And I think so do all my other neighbors because, of course, even if we had homeowners insurance, means we have to pay the deductible. So anyway, getting back to other probably either more interesting or at least other legal issues, a federal judge has rejected Santa Clara County, California's bid to have a case against GlaxoSmithKline over Avendia removed from the federal multi-district litigation over the diabetes drug, but made way for an appellate court to immediately review the decision. So that, I guess sometimes federal courts fight over who should have the case. And that's probably not unusual. I just don't handle federal matters. Now, there was a case approved for publication the day before, on March 1st, and it was a criminal law case. And in that case, the defendant appealed from an order detaining him pre-trial pursuant to the Bail Reform Act. And the state presented the complaint warrant, the affidavit of probable cause, the preliminary law enforcement incident report, and the public safety assessment to establish probable cause for the defendant's arrest and grounds for detention. Now, I'm talking about this case, not that most people are really that concerned about criminal courts. Most, and certainly law-abiding citizens, never think that they're going to be involved in the criminal courts. But this new Bail Reform Act, which you can find under the statute, is NJSA 2A, 162:1-26, is an extremely important statute in New Jersey. It was passed last year, and the reason why it's so important, it is pulling so many judges from other assignments into the criminal part because of the hearings that must be held in these cases. In any event, in this particular case, and this went up to the appellate division, the appellate division found that collectively the documents demonstrated that a firearm had been discharged, that police officers personally observed the defendant in possession of a gun and seized the weapon, and the spent shell casings. So pretrial services recommended that the defendant be detained or released with the highest level of monitoring, including electronic monitoring. And the defendant objected, arguing a live witness with knowledge of the incident sufficient to permit meaningful cross-examination was required. Now, the judge in that case, the trial judge, overruled the objection, considered the state's proffered evidence, and entered an order of detention. So now, in this case, and in most cases, unless there's some legitimate objections and the prosecution has to bring forth more than just we want him detained on a bail, we no longer have automatic, well, I shouldn't say that. Most people will now be released without bail under this new Bail Reform Act. It really shifts the burden to the prosecution. In any event, in this case, the defendant argued that permitting the state to establish probable cause by proffer, meaning by just saying that this thing was true, and without calling a witness, violated his due process rights and the Bail Reform Act. The court disagreed and affirmed the detention order, meaning the appellate division disagreed. And they found that allowing the state to proceed by a proffer did not violate due process of the act. However, the appellate division noted that at detention hearings under the Bail Reform Act, the judge retains discretion to reject the adequacy of the state's proffer and to compel production of a live witness. So this is an important case because it gives the trial judge discretion but doesn't require a hearing necessarily. In some cases it will. But that is an important criminal case. I think it may be the first one that has actually been decided by the appellate division. So in this case, what we would probably say is the defendant should have agreed to some kind of electronic monitoring. That's not unusual that instead of being detained in jail, someone will have certain restrictions, but they'll be maintained by electronic monitoring. In fact, that's a good way for people to, good way, it's almost a win-win situation, although nobody wants to, of course, have electronic monitoring. It's certainly better than sitting in jail. I know that they also do that in some cases, some immigration cases. So what else is happening? New Jersey Appeals Court has reversed a trial judge's ruling that extraordinary circumstances excuse the late filing of a Tort Claims Act. Tort Claims Notice against the state and the municipality over a fatal car crash. So it's very important. There are statutes of limitations, and certain things have to be filed by deadlines. And if you violate those deadlines, if you don't file on time, for example, a lawsuit and certain other things, but usually the lawsuit, it means that you will not be able to file your case. And in this case, there was obviously a fatal car crash, and there was a late filing of a Tort Claim Act against the state and a municipality, so that the plaintiff in that case was barred from proceeding. There are lots of things about law firms and legal news in that sense, but I'm not sure that would be, that interesting. So there was another criminal law case, again, appellate division, published, State versus Robert L. Evans. And in that appeal, the court considered the application of the plain feel exception to the warrant requirement. Now, generally, there is a requirement that warrants be issued in order to, for example, to come into someone's home. There has to be a warrant other than in certain exceptional circumstances, or apparently there's this plain feel exception to the warrant requirement. Now, that case, the warrant requirement and plain feel exception is a federal case. There's also state cases. There's Minnesota versus Dickerson, which is a U.S. case, Supreme Court case, and State versus Jackson, which is an appellate level case. And there, the plain feel exception, and this was to a strip search that was conducted after the defendant was arrested on a warrant for failing to pay a $6.50 traffic fine. And the court found that in the absence of a warrant or consent, the statute prohibits a strip search of a person detained or arrested for commission of an offense other than a crime. So in other words, in usual circumstances, they can't just do a strip search unless there is, in fact, the person has been detained or arrested for a crime. Now, failing to pay a traffic fine even if it's more than $6.50, obviously is not a crime. So the exception, if the search is based on probable cause and a, quote, recognized exception to the warrant requirement, and that's by statute. Now, the Attorney General's Office has issued guidelines, and they set forth even more exacting criteria to be satisfied before a strip search is conducted. And in this case, the Appellate Division concluded that the plain feel exception did not apply, and that further, the seizure of drugs from the defendant was not objectively reasonable. So they reversed the conviction of the defendant, and they remanded for a hearing to determine whether the search of an automobile pursuant to a search warrant was sufficiently free of taint from the unlawful search and seizure. In other words, there was a warrant to search a car, but not the person. So the question is whether or not that warrant was sufficient, and whether that warrant was sufficiently free of taint from the unlawful search and seizure. So, as I said, these cases sometimes turn on, they turn on certain constitutional protections, and that, of course, you know, is important. So we'll be back after a couple messages from some of our sponsors, and stay tuned.
Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntingChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunting Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunting Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntingChamberRadio.com app today.
This is Tony Clark, Parrot Planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Home Instead Senior Care. It's our passionate dedication to creating personal relationships between our clients and our caregivers. Visit our website at www.homeinstead.com/325.
You've got a friend.
Well, we're back. Hello again. And this is Pat Smits. And of course, the program, It's the Law. So we're talking about some of the cases that were published this week and some of the legal news. And there's another case, a tax case. I'm not sure that many people would be, again, these are partial summary judgment cases, which means that there are certain issues that the court agrees that they're going to grant or deny summary judgment. But in this case, this was a tax court, and the court concluded that the director, Division of Taxation, exceeded its authority under the statute to prescribe and issue regulations consistent with the Corporation's Business Act. So obviously, this is something that businesses, if they had any concern on this, would need to speak with their attorneys. But in any event, what happened is when it amended to exclude companies that invest in certain flow-through entities from investment company treatment. And the court found that the division did not have the authority to narrow an already comprehensive definition of investment company that's set forth by the legislature in the statute, and excluding companies that invest certain flow-through entities from contravenes the generally accepted definition of securities as used in the statute and defined by New Jersey courts. So the court denied summary judgment as to whether the plaintiff is entitled to investment company treatment under the statute, and also whether a partnership interest in a security is subject to an investment contract analysis, which turns on factual findings. So, you know, these are fairly esoteric cases, and anyone, I think, in the business community, that information is easily spread around so people know, people who are concerned or involved would know about it. So apparently, February 27, 2017, may go down in history as the day that social media, from Facebook to Snapchat, Twitter to LinkedIn, entered a pantheon of expressions deserving First Amendment protection. Don't know much more about this, but apparently that is a fairly significant date, and I'm not sure if we'll hear more about that or not. However, there's another approved for publication criminal law case. That was a case where the state appealed New Jersey versus Caliph Griffin. That was published on February 27th, and the state appealed, and leave was granted from a post-trial order to interview alternate jurors following the jury's return of a guilty verdict against the defendant on charges of felony murder, robbery, and weapons offenses. So in that case, defendant's counsel sought the interviews after one of the alternates telephoned him after the verdict, claiming several jurors routinely met to discuss the case during the trial. The alternate indicated to defense counsel the jurors participating in those discussions decided to vote guilty before summations and claimed, claimed she heard the juror who organized them say he was going to make sure the defendant did not get off like his co-defendant. Delineating the obligations of a trial judge confronted with allegations of juror misconduct made after the verdict as opposed to at trial, the appellate court concluded the alternate's allegations, even if substantiated, would not support setting aside the conviction. Because the allegations did not warrant the extraordinary procedure of calling back discharged jurors for questioning, the court reversed the order and remands for sentencing and the entry of a judgment of conviction. So I think a lot of people would really question this, but what the appellate court said is if this alternate had made these allegations or made the call before the verdict, then the trial judge would have been able to question the jurors. But in light of the fact that it was made after the verdict, the appellate court upheld the verdict and did not require the trial judge to call back the jurors. Very interesting case where I think a lot of people, if you ask them what the right thing to do, especially in a murder conviction, there would be many people who would say, wait a minute, if in fact it was a substantial claim, there should have been some kind of investigation into the claim. And what this is important and significant is the fact that in New Jersey, jurors are not and should not discuss the case during the trial. They are limited as far as such discussions. And certainly, jurors, even if they think in their own mind that someone is guilty or not guilty, that should not be discussed prior to the final discussions when the jurors are deliberating. And for someone to say that he was going to be sure that the defendant did not get off like his co-defendant is absolutely improper. And now, whether or not the person was guilty is not the point. The point is that the system has to always be fair. Now, there was a case, a tax case, in the estate of Mary Van Ripper that was published, and apparently 7 years prior to death, the Van Rippers transferred their marital home to an irrevocable trust. Now, this is not unusual. Especially wealthy people will transfer assets to a trust. And this case, pursuant to the terms of the trust, the transferors, the Van Rippers, could reside in the property until death. And at the time of their death, the property would be transferred to a niece. Now, the estate asserts the transfer to the niece is not subject to taxation pursuant to statute, since a transfer to trust occurred more than 3 years prior to death. The court held, the tax court that is, held that the transfer is indeed subject to taxation as an at or after death transfer, since the transferors did not completely dispose of all rights or powers over the marital home until their death. By holding the string of being able to reside in the property until death, when you say string, in other words, the right to reside in the property until their death, the transferors retained for themselves and did indeed exercise the right and power to enjoy the property. Therefore, according to the tax court, the at or after death exception set forth in the statute does not apply. And so that anyone who is transferring property into a trust, if in fact they don't want it subject to taxation, they have to be very careful as to how they're doing that. And that was the case here. The parties obviously didn't do it right. So that there's some other creditors and debtors' rights. These cases have not been published. So let's see what else is happening. There is the stage is set for the $112.5 million fee fight, just for the fees, in the NFL concussion litigation. Now, that was for those of you who are not really familiar with NFL or that case. That case ended in a $1 billion settlement. However, this new dispute has kicked off as the players' attorneys rush to get a piece of that $112.5 million fee or the pot for legal fees. And, you know, I know that sounds like an outrageous amount of money, but I'm sure that in this case, in order to get this settlement, the attorneys had to put in unbelievable hours, days, weeks, and months of work. Another tax case that came up is the court held that the plaintiff did not obtain sufficient benefits and burdens of ownership of assets subject to a sale leaseback transaction between the plaintiff and New Jersey Transit for those assets to be treated as plaintiff's property for purposes of the property allocation factions. You know, again, unless this is something that is, it's really very specific to the case. In this case, the plaintiff purchased the assets from New Jersey Transit
solely to make use of their federal tax benefits and transferred back to New Jersey Transit through a sublease all of the other significant benefits and burdens of ownership. So in light of this conclusion, the court held that imputed rental income from those assets should not be included in plaintiff's receipts allocation. So this obviously is some very complicated contract that General Foods Credit Investors handled with, in fact, the New Jersey Transit. I would have to read that case in detail, which I've not, in order to figure that one out. So, sorry. Some of these are easier, like the family law case, which was not approved for publication, and it was an appeal from a final restraining order in favor of the plaintiff. And in that case, the plaintiff and defendant had been friends and lived together in defendant's home. Now, defendant asked plaintiff to move out, and a dispute arose on Facebook. And this is, actually, this is a very good case. Even though it was not published, I've mentioned many, many times that anyone who allows someone else to cohabit in their home needs to have an agreement as to what happens when the person who owns the home wants the other person to move out. It's called a cohabitation agreement. And I think that people overlook the problems that can occur, such as the plaintiff in this case, when the defendant asked the plaintiff to move out and a dispute arose, the plaintiff moved out but left some of her belongings behind and then filed a temporary restraining order. She filed a complaint, actually, under the Domestic Violence Act, Prevention of Domestic Violence Act is what it's called, and received a temporary restraining order. And then at the final restraining order hearing, the trial judge found that defendant made a terroristic threat and predicate acts of harassment. Now, the defendant argued that the trial judge failed to determine that there was a whether there was any need to issue an FRO, meaning a final restraining order, and that the facts did not support the decision. Now, the appellate court found that there was substantial, credible evidence to support the trial judge's findings, where the defendant threatened to slit plaintiff's throat twice and plaintiff feared for her safety. So the difficulty is that, obviously, if he made those threats, and that's what the trial judge found, that's domestic violence. But probably this could have been eliminated if, in fact, there had been a cohabitation agreement and she, I'm assuming it's a she, agreed to move out if, in fact, that was requested of her. So we're going to be following up. I'm going to have a couple commercials, and then we'll start with the sports guys. So stay tuned.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Don't fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology. I'm your host, Chris Bianco, principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Every Tuesday morning from 10 to 11, we will cover new apps, buying advice, technology news, and answer your questions. Good day, and join me on Tech Today on HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
Hi, this is Pat Smits, and we'll be starting in a few minutes with a special program today because we have the Hunterdon Husky Peewees, although they're sitting here. Four of them are sitting here, and they don't look like peewees to me. But in any event, let me tell you about the weather, and then we'll be talking to these guys, and they're real champions. I mean, and I'll talk about the weather, and then I'll talk about the fact that they won the national championship, and then they're going to tell me that they've won it 2 years in a row. Right, guys? They're all shaking their heads because I told them they can't talk while I'm talking. In any event, as far as the weather this weekend, it looks like you guys will be able to go out and play football on Sunday, although it's going to be cold. On Sunday, the high is about 37 degrees, and then when you're back in school on Monday, it's going to be about 51 degrees. But anyway, we're supposed to, there was a 40% chance of rain or snow today, and didn't look like it. It's pretty sunny out there. Now the sun's gone down. I haven't seen any snow. Tonight, there's about a 30% chance of scattered snow showers and then mostly clear. Tomorrow, sunny. You guys can play some football. It'll be a little bit cold, 36 degrees. However, it would be toasty warm if you were at Lambeau Field, and I'm going to ask all of you if you know where Lambeau Field is, and if you don't, hey, you're not my friends. But in any event, let me tell you a little bit about them. The 2016 Hunterdon Husky Peewees completed their dream season. I guess you guys would agree, and there are two mics there. Would you agree that it was your dream season?
Definitely.
Yes.
Okay. Well, this title, and can you believe that this is the second consecutive title for this team, right?
Yeah. Yes, it is.
Okay. And after winning the Big East regional titles, the Huskies came into the AYF championships as the defending champions and the top-ranked team. Now, let me ask you, how many other teams have ever won two in a row?
I don't think any have.
Yeah, very few.
Okay, so I'm going to introduce the guys who are here right now, and then I'll introduce our coaches. Coaches aren't that important, right?
Yeah.
No, actually, coaches are very important. But we have today here, we have Jake, we have Jonathan, we have Alex, and we have Vance.
Present.
So when you guys talk, why don't you just give your first name? Because that way, not only do we have listeners now, but you guys can go and play this back. I'm sure your team members are going to be listening. And so let me ask a couple questions. First of all, who has a favorite professional team? You all do. Okay, let me ask. Jake, who's your professional team?
I'm a New Orleans Saints fan.
Oh, that's great. And let me ask you, is your dad a New Orleans Saints fan?
No, he is not. He's a New York Jets fan.
Well, good. Then how did you become a Saints fan?
Well, when I was really young, like the first year I really started following football, they won the Super Bowl. And I was four. So then I just kind of like learned all the players' names, and I really liked them.
You know, there are two ways that, well, actually there are a number of ways people become NFL fans. And we're going to talk about your team. But I'm always interested if people have NFL teams, who they are. So how about you, Jonathan? Who's your NFL team?
The New York Giants.
Oh, yeah. See, that's you live here, so that's pretty common. Although I once sat at Lambeau Field in Green Bay and watched the Giants beat my team. Do you know what game that was?
That was the...
You were pretty little.
Yeah, I think that was...
2007?
I think it was the conference finals, I think.
And actually, when it was the year that the Giants went on to win the Super Bowl. And it was 13 below zero when we sat there. Very cold. How about you, Alex? Who's your team?
My favorite team is the New England Patriots.
Oh, please. Well, I guess you're kind of happy this year, right?
Yeah, I'm definitely happy.
Now, are you a Patriots fan only because you wanted to jump on the bandwagon, or?
No, my dad actually is from Boston, so that's why I love the Patriots, and I love every Boston team. So, Boston strong, baby.
Oh, well, wait till, I hope John Manfreda gets here, because he's a Red Sox fan, so you'll have a lot to talk about. So, Vance, how about you?
I'm a Philadelphia Eagles fan.
Well, I guess, what do we say? No, actually, what I have to say is I am a diehard Green Bay Packer fan. I mean really diehard from the time I was your ages. And whatever, you know, teams, good, bad, indifferent, you just have to stick with them. So that's why I asked Alex if, in fact, he just was a Patriots fan because they've been so good. So I'm glad you're not. Well, let's talk about your team. I'd like to hear from each of you as to why are you guys so successful?
Hard work.
Hard work.
Yeah, hard work and great coaching.
Yeah, definitely.
So how old, when you started with the Pee Wees, not this past year, but the year before, were you all on the team?
Yeah. Yes.
All
okay.
Of us. Yes.
Yeah. And how old were you when you started?
I was five.
Okay, tell me your names when you say it, because people aren't really interested in who you are. So, somebody who was four was Vance, right? You were four? Wow. So that was Pee-wee touch football, correct?
It was flag football.
Flag football. What's the difference between touch and flag?
In touch football, you have to two-hand touch them, and then they're down. Flag football, you have to pull the flags and to make them go down.
Oh, okay. So, you're not still playing flag football, are you?
No, we're playing tackle football. Correct?
Okay, so, Jonathan, when did you start playing tackle football?
When I was 7 years old.
Okay. Now, are Pee-wees like Pop Warner, or is that a different,
We're an AYF.
Yeah,
we're an AYF.
Okay.
American Youth Football.
Okay. Because
it's AYFC. I think it is American Youth Football and Cheer.
Okay, but I'm assuming it's fairly. I'm more familiar with Pop Warner, so I'm assuming it's pretty similar.
Yes.
Pretty similar.
Okay.
We actually switched leagues not long ago.
Yeah, we were Pop Warner.
Oh, you did.
We were Pop Warner.
Okay.
Well, also a difference is in AYF.
Who's talking?
Jake.
Okay. I know it's going to be hard for you to say your names when you talk. I think it's just helpful because I think the audience wants to know who you are, especially if your parents listen to you. Okay, we have one more player who joined us. Just pull up a chair and tell me your name.
Hi, I'm Cooper Ballett. I'm the quarterback.
You're Cooper?
Yeah.
Okay. Hi, Cooper. Thanks for joining us. We've just been talking a little bit, and I have to then ask you, who's your favorite NFL team?
I'm a Raiders fan.
Okay. So you have a Raiders fan, a Giants fan, a Phillies fan, a Saints fans.